So Kinyas. So there's a couple of different things that's interesting about Kinyas. First is going to be the whole minhag concept when we're talking about Kinyas. What exactly is this minhag? Is this minhag binding, and the different applications of how we're thinking about that minhag with Kinyas? So Kinyas is really a great place to learn about how minhagim affect halacha and affect Klal Yisrael. And that's it's going to be relevant across the board. So really, that's sort of like theory of Kinyas, which is going to be probably the first part of this year, and the second part of this year we'll actually get into halachas and different halachas that come up with Kinyas in general, specifically this year and in other situations. So starting from the top, there's a couple of different reasons brought down in Rishonim about what exactly is the reason for this minhag. So Rabbeinu Peretz says that the reason why we have this idea of Kinyas is because there was a concern of any grain that could be used to make bread, which basically defines Kinyas in very broad terms as anything that people use to make bread, right? That's how he defines what Kinyas is. And I guess maybe we're afraid that people will get confused between wheat that makes bread or rice that's made into bread. So we don't want to confuse anybody. So we just across the board say anything that can be used to make bread is awesome. The tour says that the concern by Kinyas is that we're afraid that some chametz got mixed in. Right, we're afraid that there are certain there's wheat that there was maybe some rice got in there or something like that. Rice that some wheat got in there or things along those lines. So then we were worried that maybe there's some real chametz in there. So it's a real chashash iser. It's not just a concern of maybe people get confused. There's actually a chashash iser. There's a very serious problem that we're trying to avoid. The Rabbeinu Manoach has an interesting idea, which is he thinks that these things can also be chametz. Which is a fascinating concept, right? That's not just the classic wheat that can become chametz, but any one of these, whatever these things are, it's a different problem, but whatever these things are, those things can potentially become chametz. Now, that shita is fascinating, but it's relevant for a couple of different ideas, I think. One is...
I'm never sure if it's just my computer when this happens, or it's like a...
We lost you.
Which point did you lose me? Sorry.
You were talking about whether it's a chashash of a real iser or not.
So the Torah says, right, so the Torah says it's a chashash of a real iser, that maybe chametz actually got in. And Rabbeinu Manoach has this interesting chiddush that is that these things that are included in Kinyas can actually become chametz. Right? Now, that sheet is fascinating, A, because he's being mechadish that things other than the classical grains can become chametz, but also it has potentially has the at least the idea has some relevant halachic applications. One of them is for celiac patients that can't eat grain, that can't eat wheat matzah, right? So they make spelt matzah. So one of the problems with that is how do we, it's sort of difficult to know how we define making something chametz. But if you ask me, how do I make wheat chametz? I mix the wheat together with water, and that makes a chametz, right? If it lasts like that for more than 18 minutes, that will be chametz. I have to have baked it before those 18 minutes, right? But maybe for spelt or maybe for other things, making something chametz is much faster than 18 minutes. It's very hard to know how to define when you make something chametz. So that's why it's interesting. That's why this concept of maybe other things can also become chametz is a fascinating idea. We're not actually passing like Rabbeinu Manoach. It's just I'm using him as the idea, at least, has application in other areas of halacha.
Mistama, his svar actually makes a lot of sense because what he's saying is just like we could become chametz, anything else that we're hoshesh can become bread actually could become chametz. Like we always view it as like, oh, that's a ridiculous opinion. Like, oh, kidneys should never become chametz. Like his svar actually makes more sense that it should become chametz.
I'm sure he'll be very happy to hear that you agree with him.
why not?
I agree. That's the same problem with the celiac patient, right? With us making spelt matzah. How do we know when something becomes... We don't know. Chametz is a halachic term. It's not a scientific term, right? When do we know when something becomes chametz or not? It's very difficult to... There's only a way that we know that. We just have this mesura, whatever you want to call it, right? And so, and also the other reason why Rabbeinu Manoach is interesting, which might actually speak to Daniel's point, is that of all these two reasons, right? So for the first two reasons, we'll talk about whether or not these minhagim are binding in a second. But between Rabbeinu Peretz and the tour, right, we could talk about whether or not those things still apply nowadays. Maybe if you want to tell me that there's a concern that wheat got mixed together with the rice, maybe nowadays we're not worried about that. right? So we could talk about whether or not that minhag still has reason to stand. Rabbeinu Manoach's reason that these things can actually become chametz, that's more of like a svara al chazal. We have no idea what to do with that. We don't know when things can become chametz or not. So theoretically, nowadays, it should also be a problem, right? There's no, that minhag will be binding because we have no idea what the reason is. Now, just because we know the reason for a minhag doesn't necessarily mean it's not binding. We'll talk about that in a second. But it's, you know, more, it's definitely, moreover, with cases that we have no idea what the svara is, those should definitely be binding. So that's the, those are like the three shitas rishonim. Now, there's a potentially another nafkamina here, which is when we're introduced to new things that we're not sure whether or not to call them kinyas, what category do we put them in? The most classic, or the most recent example is probably quinoa, right? Is quinoa considered kinyas or not? So if the issue is that it's something that can be used to make bread, so apparently in South America, at least in some areas, they do use quinoa to make bread. So maybe, since we're afraid that people are going to get confused, maybe that means that the issue is that we're scared that people are going to get confused between bread made out of kinyas or bread made out of wheat will still apply. So maybe quinoa should be included. If the issue is real chametz that gets mixed in, right? So then, for all I know, that real chametz getting mixed in was only the things that they were talking about. Like kinoa, I'm not worried that real chametz got mixed in. So then it shouldn't be a problem. It's only things that Chazal specifically told me. Chazal is not the right term. The minhag originally told me, this early minhag told me that we're worried about, but these other things we're not worried about. So these are potential nafkaminas in these shitas. Now, before going on to the actual halachas of how this will affect, I want to have a broader conversation which really helps the theory of how to apply the halachas of kinyas as to what exactly is this minhag that we're talking about. Okay, so I want to start from the beginning and work my way down, right? So there are clearly minhagim that are clearly binding. For example, in Chutz La'aretz, we keep 2 days of Yantim. We keep 2 days of Yantim because of a minhag, right? There's no, it's a minhag, that's a minhag. Chazal told me we have to keep 2 days. Even though I know exactly which day Yantiv is the right day, still there's a minhag on Besenu Be'ad. They know it's a minhag Chazal, I have to keep 2 days of Yantiv. That is a binding minhag across the board, right? There's no question about it. Now, we also have, for example, on the other end of the spectrum, let's say, I don't know, davening Nusach Sfar, finishing all of benching. These things are like minhagim, where you stop alei chaswein, you say the whole thing, right? Which parts of davening do you say, do you not say, do you change, do you say iskadel biska? All these other things are probably just like minhagim, you know, yaya nishnish, as you say, right? Whatever, you want to do it, do it. You don't want to do it, don't do it. It doesn't really matter so much. These aren't really binding minhagim. There are minhagim that are much stronger that are clearly binding. So now the question is, where does kinyas fit in? So Yantav Sheni Shevalius is easy because that's a minhag chazal. That's an old minhag. So, okay, clearly that's something that's serious and binding. But kinyas is less clear. So if we work backwards to another example of a minhag that's just widespread among Ashkenazi communities, we have Cherem Rabbeinu Gershom. Right? Cherem Rabbeinu Gershom is a minhag that's spread among Ashkenazi communities and is binding to Ashkenazim. Now, the easy way to think about this is maybe these are minhagim that are specifically quoted by the Ramah. Minhagim that are specifically quoted by Ramah, those become more serious for whatever reason. Maybe either the Ramah is the proof that that's a widespread minhag, or the Ramah is the reason that that becomes a widespread minhag. However you want to think about it, this is going to be a much broader conversation about minhagim, which we're not doing. We're going to have a more limited conversation about minhagim. So if kinyas is more similar to Cherem Rabbeinu Gershom, so then it's something that's binding to all children. So how exactly would we define that? So the Rivash apparently has this idea. If the minhag was something that was binding on children, then that's something that's considered binding. He says that about Cherem Rabbeinu Gershom, and Rav Mizrachi then applies it to kinyas, the same concept. Since kinyas was something that wasn't just whatever it was in the 1100s, I don't know however early this was, which is another problem, how early did this start? Since it was binding then, and then they told their children they can't either do it, that becomes binding. Now, there's a very simple reason why that would become binding. The svara makes sense, and that is when I make a nether, right, I'm going to fast tomorrow, I can then go in front of 3 people, do ataras nedarim, and be able to get myself out of my nether, right, because I made the nether, so I can annul the nether. But if my father made a nether, it's much more difficult to say that I can now annul that nether. I can't be matir a nether that's not mine. The nether makes me bound to the concept, to the nether, but it doesn't, but I can't get out of it. So it makes sense, Misvara, why that would be. Now, if you look at Chivas of Rav Yosef, right, he doesn't think that it's a widespread minhag, right? So it really becomes a sort of a historical question, that has halachic implications. Now, I don't know if the history really matters so much as how we think about it halachically. But so I'm not going to be so worried about the history about what happened when. I'm going to be more concerned about how poskim think about it. So Rav Yosef, at least, the Sfari representative, he thinks that it's not a widespread minhag, and therefore you could change. If I'm an Ashkenazi, I go to a Sfari yeshiva, everyone's eating rice, so I can eat rice. It's not a big deal. So that's really the different ideas of how to think about whether or not this thing's binding. Now, if we are, now, as Ashkenazim, which I think everybody here is an Ashkenazi, even though some of us might be married to Sfaridim, we're going to assume that the minhag is binding. So now that the minhag is binding, how exactly do you get out of that minhag? For example, if I'm in Chutz Laretz and I keep 2 days of Yantim, because that's my minhag to keep 2 days of Yantim, because that's minhag of the sin of Yadenu. Now, if I go to Israel, right, and I move there, right, and I'm staying there for good, I can't decide. I'm still keeping 2 days of Yantiv. My makam change. I now have to only, I can only keep 1 day of Yantiv. Assuming that, you know, forget all the, I don't really care right now about the details about whether or not you keep 1 day or 2 days when you're in Israel. That doesn't really bother me right now. The point, the general concept of when you have 2 days, when you have this minhag, so I can't, if my makam doesn't have this minhag, I can't do something else. So when I'm in Israel, I have to. If I move to Israel, then I can only keep 1 day. I'm not allowed to keep 2 days, and vice versa, the same way around. If Ben Eretz Yisrael moves to Chutz Laretz, he's not allowed to keep 1 day anymore. He has to keep 2 days. His minhag, the minhag of Makam, where he is 2 days. So how do we think about Makam when we're talking about kidneys? So the easiest way to talk about this, probably the most practical way that this comes up, is getting married. Right, so now a Sephardi girl marries an Ashkenazi guy, or vice versa. Does she have to eat kidneys? Can she eat kidneys, or does she have to stop eating kidneys, depending on which way we're talking about? So there's two ways to think about this. If we think about when you marry someone, you moved into his makam, right? Nowadays, it used to be like back in Europe, there was a thing called makam. Each city had their own minhagim. So if you move from one city to the other, you have a new minhag. Now, in any one city, you have every minhag imaginable. So it's, you don't have makam because of cities. But you could potentially have makam when you move to your husband's house. The reason why when a wife gets married, she potentially has to change her minhagim is because she's now in the makam of her husband. The husband decides what the minhagim of the makam are. It goes based off him. So therefore, if a woman who, a Sephardi woman, marries an Ashkenazi guy, she cannot eat kidneys. And vice versa, if an Ashkenazi girl marries a Sephardi guy, she's allowed to eat kidneys because her makam, her decides what her minhag is, her husband defines the makam, and therefore, she now, either can, depending which way we're going, she now has to follow her husband's minhag. Now, in order to assume this, though, there's a big chiddush here, and that is you have to assume that your husband's house is halachically considered a makam, right? So Rav Moshe does say that, so you definitely have, it's Rav Moshe's svara, that a husband's house is considered a makam, but it's not necessarily so clear that a husband's house has enough to establish as a makam. A makam, you know, classically is defined as what the city does, what the area that you're living in. It's not classically defined as the house that you're currently inside. So it's a little bit difficult to know. It is definitely a chiddush. So I just want to leave that. It is a chiddush. The other way of thinking about this is going back to what we were talking about before, which is there are certain, when you have a takanas chazal, I mentioned this yesterday, right? When you have a minag, when you have a gzera, the gzera, the takana, they're all very limited in how they're defined. So when the Chazal make a takana on a specific thing, only those things will be usher, not things which look like it, might be similar to it, might not be similar to it. Those are not included. So you can very easily make the argument that by the whole minhag of kidneys, that whole minhag was only made for basically, let's call it men. And the women that are marrying in or marrying in and out, like those don't have to, are not included in that minhag, and they can really change. So if a Ashkenazi, if an Ashkenazi girl marries a Sephardi guy, she's allowed to change because she moved into the Sephardi house. So the takana was ever made for her. Or if a Sephardi girl marries an Ashkenazi, that's the easy way to think about it. So that the takana wasn't made for those people. So then they can really move around and it's not a big deal. That is the idea of how that minhag applies. Now, that is going, this whole concept of how limited this minhag is will have other ramifications when you talk about the actual practical halakha. So there's a couple of different situations that I want to discuss. So let's start from the top. So one is whether or not you can use the whole kernels, right? So in general, we don't, Phineas includes the whole kernels. I know how every couple of years you see someone else writes a truva that you can eat rice cakes because only Issur of Phineas is when it touches water. Rice cakes never touch the water or something along those lines. So then it's you're allowed to eat rice cakes. I don't know of any serious marmukim that says that. Most of the sources say raw or cooked. They're all, it's considered kidneys. Those are all things that are included within the kidneys category. What is very interesting, though, is that you would think that I could take kidneys and then make it into matzah, right? I can't eat wheat because it's chametz, but if I make it into matzah, I'm allowed to eat it. So I would think that I could do the same thing with kidneys. The problem is, there's apparently another reason why we don't do that, which is we're afraid that if you make rice matzah, people are going to think you can be yotzei yachiyav matzah when you eat the rice matzah. So it has absolutely nothing to do with it. So if kidney is, it's just, we're just worried that people get concerned. So as a general thing, we don't make, you know, rice matzah. We only make matzah out of wheat, which basically means effectively we don't allow kidneys in any form, raw, cooked, matzah form, not allowed. Yeah, Daniel.
How do we define kidneys?
What is considered kidneys?
Yeah.
So that's going to be part of the problem. Meaning I am not going to bore you with a long list. If you want, you can Google it. There's
things no, saying,
definitely
like, what's
considered
the,
kidneys. What?
What's the Haggadah of kidneys? Like, how do we define that?
So,
for example,
if we go back to the beginning of this year, it depends, right? Because if it's something that we're afraid that people are going to make into bread, so like for example, I don't think you can take the string beans, right? That's considered kidneys. I don't think
right. I don't understand.
You can ever make that into bread, but it's a seed, so we're worried that people are going to get confused by the seed. It depends which reason you use. You're going to include other things. So in general, I think we're machmir for both reasons. So you end up including a lot of stuff. So string beans get included, rice gets included, corn potentially gets included. Like a lot of things are going to get included. But some things are not going to be clear about. Like for example, Rav Moshe is machmir peanuts. He doesn't think peanuts is considered kidneys. I don't know of anyone that actually eats peanuts on Pesach. Ashkenazi eats peanuts on Pesach.
Peanuts whole or any derivative?
I think any form. I don't think he thinks that peanuts are included in kidneys at all. I'm pretty sure that that's right. So he just doesn't include any kidneys. He said it had nothing to do with this. Corn, which apparently was not something that they ever used, I think, but the Mishnah Berurah says it's usur. So corn got added onto the list. Like, it's very difficult. I can't give a shir where I could tell you what the rules are, and therefore these things are going to be included in kidneys. I give you general guidelines, and then I'll just give you the list of your local kashrus agency, and they'll tell you what's included in kidneys, right? It's very difficult to really know how to include things in kidneys or not.
Okay.
So that's why I'm sort of avoiding that part. And I'm really just talking about the theory more than anything else. So other areas where that's important to be aware of for kidneys. One is for Shasa Tzerech and for a Chola. So since this Gzeira is Takana, we could say Takanas are limited. So we say that Takana is limited to a time where people, there wasn't a Shasa Tzerech, there wasn't a Chola, and also for a Tina, but also for a Katan, kidneys is not included in that list. Which then means there are a couple of important points. First of all, most importantly for a tinok, if you ever you have a kid and you have to give them infamil is kidneys. So kidneys is mutter for a kid. It's fine. It's not a problem. What is though important, even though I can give, let's say, my kid, I can feed him rice, but if I cook the rice, I should cook the rice in their own dishes. Okay, in a separate set of dishes, it's going to be my kidneys dishes. It's not chametz, but I shouldn't cook my regular food in the rice dishes. What is interesting, if I accidentally use my regular Pesach dishes and make rice with them, and I then want to kasher it, so to speak, so that I can use it on Pesach as an Ashkenazi, so I'm allowed to do Haggadah on Yontif, even though in general you're not allowed to do Haggadah on Yontif, since it's just kidneys and whatever, and we're using it for a time when you were allowed to use it, so it's kidneys, so we let you get away with it, and you're allowed to do Haggadah on Yontif, even though in general Haggadah would be Asr on Yontif.
Do you need to do Haggadah?
Yeah, you should do the Haggadah as an Ashkenazi.
Saying because the kidneys is not chametz.
Right, but we're machmir on it. That's the whole point.
Interesting.
But don't worry, we're going to get to other areas in one second. When you go visit your Sephardi friend, we'll get to those halachas in a second. It will be interesting application. And then we're
going
to ask me questions
friend.
To explain to you the difference between these two things. I'm going to get really confused. and I won't know how to answer you. So we'll do that in a minute, though, then you can get me there. But the other important thing to be aware of for a shatz atzerech or for a chola, it's better always to boil the kidneys first. Even though we said if you cook kidneys, it's not that's still included in the gzera, but it's probably a bit of a lesser level. But once you cook it, like you cook it within those few minutes, whatever it is, it's not really becoming chametz. We're not really worried about it, so it's better to have it cooked rather than raw. Okay, something that's particularly important for potentially now. I have no idea what the matzias is in Bat Galim, so this will really depend on whether or not you could tell me. You tell me what's going on. But if I do have to make a kinyan, so first of all, if it really is shas atzarach and people don't have food or whatever it is, so then you can buy kinyans. It's not a problem. I am not, in fact, I don't think that that's what's going on, but you tell me. The areas where you could be makel is, first of all, any oil that was made before Pesach, let's say rice oil, canola oil, things that in general we wouldn't use on Pesach, it's not really clear that that kinyan was included those things. So, in general, I think we're machmir. But, like, if it's shas atzerech, you have no other oils, so you can use those oils. It's not really that you can be makel there. The other place you can be makel is peanuts. Is there a Maisha says it's fine. So, I don't know why peanuts would ever be a shas atzerech. I don't know what dire situation you're in that you need peanuts, but whatever. If you really need peanuts, so go for it, I guess. The other place where you can be makel with kidneys is actually not only shas atzerech, but across the board, is apparently chemicals made out of kidneys. So, acerbic acid, which is actually relevant because they put it in Gerber's, in that food. They put acerbic acid is the reason why some of them don't have a hefter for Pesach. So for acerbic acid, those are I'm not entirely clear. I read a couple of different things. Some people tell me that it's chametz issue. Okay, in which case it's chametz, so less to talk about. But although it might be buckled, the elix, so maybe it's mutter, but that's a conversation about Gerber's, which I'm not going to get into. I saw somewhere else that told me that acerbic acid is made as chemicals, is some sort of, they extracted something from the kidneys. So if you change kidneys, the form completely, so we consider it a davar chadash, in which case it's allowed to be used. That's not included in the zera of kidneys.
So it's for the kid.
What'd you say?
It's also for the kid.
Oh, yeah. If it's for the kid, then it's fine. I'm talking about even for you. Like, if you want to, I don't know what foods there is that are kidneys because they're an extract or there's some sort of chemical extract from kidneys. But if they are, then it's fine. It's not a problem. The other important halachas here are if you're at your Sephardi friends, your Sephardi in-laws, and your Ashkenazi, obviously. So there are halachas that are important for there also. One of them is that you could use their dishes if it's me'es le'es, right? So if they haven't used those dishes in 24 hours to make rice, so now you can use it to make yourself your food. What's important is you don't have to ask if it was me'es le'es. If you're completely ignorant, you have no idea, just you can use it. If you are sure that they did recently, you just saw them make rice on the spot, you probably shouldn't. You should wait me'es le'es, right? Once it's me'es le'es, so then it's the time is pogum, so then it's not really a big deal. So then it's not a problem. So now Daniel's going to ask me, wait, you just told me before, by Tinuk, I have to do agala on those kelim when they're mine. Yeah, you're right. So we're being more, this is the whole idea of the takanas, that we're being more machmir when it's my kelim versus when it's someone else's kelim. He's allowed to make kidneys, so I'm not being machmir on that to kasher. You're right, it's not really a comment. The other thing is, other important stuff is, a Sephardi can cook for an Ashkenazi, and be mevatel lechatchila, right? So if I'm Ashkenazi, right, I'm not allowed to eat kidneys. As a general principle, we have a rule that you're not allowed to be mevatel issa lechatchila, right? If let's say I have my meat stew and I want to add a little bit of milk, right? Even though it's going to be batel b'shishim, it's asa to be mevatel issa lechatchila. So I'm not allowed to do that. Same thing on Pesach. If I want to add a little bit of rice to my whatever it is that I'm making, I'm not allowed to be mevatel issa lechatchila. But Sephardi could cook for an Ashkenazi. And so if a Sephardi is cooking for a group of Ashkenazim and Sephardim, so then he's allowed to be mevatel lechatchila. Because for him, it's not mevatel issa lechatchila. He's being mevatel heter lechatchila. Because he's allowed to eat the rice, right? So he's allowed to do that. But, this is, again, probably falls under the category of, it's our thing, so maybe we should be a little bit respectful for it. He shouldn't, Sephardi shouldn't go and make an Ashkenazi a food where he's being mevatel lechatchila. He just could be mevatel lechatchila. He doesn't have to be. Okay, so that's the general rule. The other thing is that if it's it doesn't have to be batel b'shishim by kinyas, right? By kinyas, it's just it's batel b'roiv. Roiv is good enough. So as long as you have, you know, 51 or 49 ratio, you're fine. So apparently in Israel, there's a this is what I'm told. There's a hechsher that's kinyas, and then there's a hechsher that says tarovus kinyas. If it's tarovus kinyas, I think that means that it's less than half. So then it depends on how you want to think about this. Theoretically, based off the presentation that I just gave, since in Israel there's a significant Sephardi population, when the manufacturer made this food, they intended it for a Sephardi and Ashkenazi audience, and therefore you should be allowed to eat it. There shouldn't be a problem with eating Tarubis kinyas. From what I'm aware of, people in Israel are makbid on Tarubis kinyas, and they don't do it. I'm not sure why, either because I'm wrong about the Matthias that I just said, either maybe there's more, they're making it for Ashkenazi, maybe it's more than a 50-50 ratio, maybe that's not what Tarubis kinyas means. Or the other reason is, I mean, the OU in general has a policy that they're not somech on bittel. Even if, like, you know, they can make a food and something will be bittel, they don't like things that have, I guess, questions on them, so they avoid anything of bittel. So maybe have the same idea by the hechsher agencies in Israel. Maybe they do the same thing. If it's something that has to be somech on a bittel, they don't like saying that it's kosher Pesach. I have no idea. But that's the... that seems to be the policy, and that seems to be what people do. So I'm definitely not advocating to eat tarovas kidneys. I'm just pointing out that I'm not sure why Ashkenazim can't eat tarovas of kidneys.
No, there are definitely some Ashkenazim that eat it. I know some Ashkenazim that will eat it.
Okay, so I just don't know. I'm just not sure. I'm not exactly sure what the problem is, but it could just be that I have no idea what
I'm saying. That's of what course, I know what the problem is. Of course, anybody wants can be machmir, but I definitely know Ashkenazim who are so mech and do eat the tarobas.
So you're saying tarobas kinyas really is something that's batel b'roiv, at least.
Yeah, I mean, based on the people who I know who are pretty learned people, they say it's less than half. It's batel b'roiv. Yeah,
so if that's true, I have no idea why you have to be machmir for that.
I'm saying anybody can be machmir for anything.
Confused, whatever. There's, you know, whatever. If you want to be machmir, I guess you can always be machmir. It's very easy to say no. I'm just not sure what the reason to be machmir for that is. I'm pretty sure it'll be motel v'chatchila. I don't think there's a problem. And just the last point, which is just a general point about kidneys, which is there's only an Isra chila on kidneys. There's no Isra hana. So if I want to go ahead and use my kidneys to light candles or sell kidneys or something like that, there's no Isra hana, so I could definitely go ahead and do that. That's just the last. I really should have said that first. That's probably the most special halacha. I just wanted to make sure that I got that out there. As far as, you know, Daniel, back to your point, what's included in kidneys or not? I mean, this list. I was originally going to just quote a whole list, and I decided against it because why would I waste your time if you just look it up online?
So no, I wasn't curious. I don't care for the list. I know most of the things that I would eat if they're kidney or not. I'm more curious about how we
It's a very difficult. Those are the what I start off with in the shir. Those are the parameters of how we would think about it. So in general, there's basically the practical nafkamina of those parameters is that in general there's a machlokes about whether or not you can add new things to the zera, or is it just what was originally mentioned back in Europe or whatever this happened,
right?
The Germanic states where this started, right? That's the idea. Any questions? Anything else? Okay. It has been a pleasure, everybody. So have we decided that we're interested?